What if it was possible to have local fresh groceries delivered right to your door? Think of all the free time you'd have. Well, Instacart gives unlimited grocery delivery for one low monthly fee. Forgot that special ingredient in your favorite dish? Instacart can deliver it to your front door in as fast as 1 hour. You can shop multiple stores, see deals in your area, and save time and money. I've been using Instacart for over 3 years. I started using them in Arizona and I'm using them here in Florida. I love the time-saving convenience. They pick the freshest products and they keep my eggs safe too. To receive your first delivery free, follow the link in the show notes so that Instacart knows that we sent you and to help support the show. Instacart. Never step foot in a grocery store again. Welcome to Empowered Within, a soul-quenching, transformational podcast that will set your soul on fire. Through candid and inspiring conversations, leading experts, celebrities, healers, and I share our journeys of how we've overcome challenges to living an empowered life from within. I'm your host, Jennifer Pilates. Welcome to another episode of Empowered Within. Hi there, and welcome to the show. I am honored to have with us today's guest, Mr. Jason Pike. It has been a long time in the making for this interview, and I'm so excited to dive in with him. Let me tell you a little bit, though. The Army investigated him, arrested him, and tried to break him. Lieutenant Colonel Jason Pike is undoubtedly a soldier against all odds, a national best-selling author and book. He's a combat veteran with over 31 years of service and 9 years of those living overseas. Jason, I'm so excited that you're here today. Thank you so much for coming and bringing all of your incredible, valuable insights to our community today.
Yes, Jennifer, I'm happy to be on your show and thank you for what you do too.
Oh, thank you. We were talking a little bit off air and I was expressing how I've read the book once a while ago, started rereading it, and Jason commented the dirty laundry, the sexiness of the book. And I said, wow, I never thought sexy, but he's right on the dirty laundry. So let's dive in and get into some of that dirty laundry and take it back to the time where everyone told you basically the odds were stacked against you. And yet in that moment, that propelled you and really changed your life. Take me back to that day.
Yes, it was the first grade. I was only about 7 years old. And it was pretty much I failed English and writing are my worst subjects. And that remained with me. It still is, even though I'm a national bestseller. I can go figure that one out. But no, I assume that's true. The experts say it's true. Anecdotally, people say, yeah, you ain't right. I understand that. I accept it. I'm going to pretty much do that for the most part. And I pretty much felt that there was no way out. Academics, education are important in life. And I didn't have it. And I didn't have it until even my high school counselor says, you don't have the SAT scores to get into college. And I didn't. And it was not only with anecdotal, but it was with education. It was with testing. I was identified as a problem learner, a disabled learner. So that's all pretty much what I expected until I went into the Army at the year. I was 17 years old in my 11th, between my 11th and 12th grade year of high school is when I joined, because I had failed. I was a little older. And once that happened, things started to change in my mind, a 17-year-old mind. Yeah.
Wow. So how was that when you decided to join the military? Was that like, I feel this is my only option? Or did someone say, hey, this is a great option. I think this can really help you moving forward.
Yeah. So I didn't feel at that time I had much opportunities in life. There was either going to college, which was pretty much the experts say it's out of the question. And so I thought, well, go to the military, go part-time, be a part-time soldier, National Guard. They used to call that the Nasty Girls. It was a lower form of military, and it's higher now. But so I said, I'll just go into the National Guard, weekend warrior, drink beer on the weekends, shoot weapons and things, and maybe try to find my way at that age of 17. And I went into basic training in 1983, between my 11th and 12th grade years of high school, and pretty much found Jesus on the other side of a stick. I went through a different form of hell. I was one of the worst privates out of the platoon of 40-something, maybe 50 soldiers. They identified me as someone who just couldn't get it right. They sent me to a criminal correctional facility, not because I did anything criminal, but it was like a motivational scared straight program for only 4 hours to get your butt in gear to do the right thing and try to improve yourself or break you. It didn't break me. I stayed in and I stayed strong, but it did a twitch. Once you go into a level of hell, sometimes things change or sometimes things break and they reform. And that's what happened in my mind at the age of 17. And I decided, you know what, I'm never going to quit this thing. I'm going to keep on going. And I eventually got out of that facility. It was only about a day. And I graduated from basic training. It's only basic training, but from where I was coming from, that was a big deal, what I had been through. And I can't explain, I wasn't able to talk to it, but it was hard. It was hard for me. I don't know about everybody else, but it was hard, but they talk about it. And so it twitched me. I said, you know what? I came out of this. I think I can go to college, but they say I can't, but I think I can. I think I can do more than most people think. And that only snapped in me when I was just formed 18. And I couldn't explain it, but I just felt that all the experts and the tests, I think I can challenge all that. I've already been through hell and they don't understand this. And I think that I can go through more. And that's what happened, really. And that from that point of going into hell and coming out changed my trajectory and changed me on a better, a more positive path than what all the experts and the test scores said. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. And I know I can speak to growing up in a military family. And it's so funny to hear it, like, because we used to joke, I lived on a military base numerous times. And the weekend warriors, when they come in and you hear about people going through basic training. And I find that back in the day, that was a big deal. That was going through hell for people. The stories that I heard, I thought, oh my gosh, I would never, I don't think I would make it a day. And here, not only did you make it through that, but you made it through this other, what was the school called?
I went through a criminal correctional facility. Yeah. It was Fort Lawton, Oklahoma. Lawton is the town. It's Fort Sill, Oklahoma. They don't have it there. They've transferred it over to Fort Leavenworth, but it was for criminals. But there was a drug deal within the sergeant ranks. They had a drug deal to send the worst privates there to try to break them or make them. And it made me, it broke a lot of other people. But it was one of those old scared straight programs. You send somebody it was before the internet, before cell phones. I felt at that time I was getting kicked out. I felt that I couldn't adapt and eventually I would be processed out. But it wasn't any of that. It was just they wanted to beat the hell out of you and see if they could change you. And so that big rocks into small rocks and screamed and yelled at a different level of hell than just basic training. And then once I came out of there, I was all bloodied and beaten up. And I just said, if I can handle this, I can just keep on going. And so that's what happened. And eventually I made it out of that facility, which was only a day of the basic training. And then I graduated and I went on to my senior year of high school and everybody had family, friends, they just saw a different change. And I didn't even understand it. I was only newly formed 18-year-old mind. I knew I'd changed, but I didn't know what the hell I went through. I couldn't even explain what I went through. It was that raw in my mind.
Yeah. And that's how I remember growing up hearing about it. Nowadays, I'm not so sure that it's the same, but I don't know because I haven't been. But when you now you're a junior in high school going into a senior graduating. So were you at that point going on the weekends? You were doing your weekend warrior.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So I was a soldier and a high school senior at the same time. Yeah.
That is amazing. And then when did your mindset shift to go, I'm so passionate about this. This is my career. Like, I am a patriot. When did that shift for you and you propel your military career?
I'd always been a patriot, but the ability to think I could do more was right after basic training. When I went into my senior year of high school, 18 years old, I said, you know what? I think I can go to college. I got to find a way to do it. And I said, junior pretty much a high school counselor says, don't even go to college. But the SAT scores prove this is your scores. This is, don't you understand? You're not. Yeah, I understand that. But I thought what I went through, I couldn't explain what I went through, but I knew. So I said junior college, maybe a less than a 4 year or something where it's a beginner. And I went into a junior college where they could take anybody lame, lazy, or crazy. And I just went in there, put my paperwork in. They said, hey, you're in. I was like, they don't care about your schools or whatever your college. They didn't care about your SAT scores or. And then I built myself up from there, and I eventually transferred into a reputable four-year college in South Carolina. I just felt I had to go everything from the bottom, just like I did. And I says, I'll have to go from the bottom. I'll have to work myself up. And that's what happened. So when I came out, I started thinking, I was like, what just happened to me? I don't understand it. So that's what happened. And I said, but I had to be beaten to be able to think that way. I felt that. I think that. And then I said, I'm going to college. I don't care about everybody else's what they say. And it surprised the family, surprised everybody. Pretty much it was like, we don't have a whole lot of hope. I went into junior college. I did work my ass off. I did take John Ritter. He was an actor years ago. He had a tape, where there's a will, there's an A. And I told you my educational processing is not that good, but I had to learn how to study. I had to learn how to form what's important, what's not, and how to strategize on classes. And I did that, and I applied that. And I have a chapter in my book called Where There's a Will, There's an A, and how to get an A. And even if you don't, that was a big, getting a college education was a big deal. It wasn't in engineering. It was an agriculture education, something I could understand. But I did get a college education, but it did take me longer, and I did have to work. I was always a soldier at the same time, either with ROTC, it was an ROTC scholarship, or it was with the reserves.
And even in that, I must say, like, how incredible from first grade to having basically someone tell you, why don't you just sit down and relax because there's not a lot for you in this world, to suddenly... Mm-hmm. You're graduating high school and you're a soldier. Now you're going to college and you're a soldier. And then you're a soldier. And then you're going overseas. How does that work for you? How did that make you feel? Because that in some ways must have been so powerfully empowering for you.
It was incredibly empowering. It was like taking little steps up a ladder, and you just, I've gone past 2-3 rungs. I'm up a little bit more. It's like, whoa. First time I got a girlfriend was when I was a soldier. It's like, because I was more confident to get a girlfriend. It was like, whoa, this is pretty cool. So I just kept on going up that ladder and seeing the positive. It could have been a scholarship from ROTC. It could have been a little extra money, a little extra pay, going up the ranks. And that was empowering, just to go those little baby steps up. And yeah, I felt that I felt blessed. I didn't take it for granted at all, because I felt that I was coming from the bottom ladder of life, and anything up is good. And so a lot of those folks who graduate all these good scores and come out, to me, I didn't take it for granted. I felt like I was like very lucky all the time up, and I'm blessed or lucky or just, whoa, this is cool. And I didn't take it for granted. I felt that any time that I could fall down, because I fell down so many times in my life, and I just didn't want to. I wanted to cherish that moment as I walked up that ladder. Yeah, it was cool. Yeah,
I love how you talk about taking the small steps and appreciate them. And cheering yourself on. You're not looking, because had you of when you were 17 thought about being a lieutenant colonel, that probably felt like absolutely absurd to you. And so I love that you're sharing with our audience, taking these small steps, celebrating your wins, being grateful for them in that moment. That's really what propelled you in those moments, though, because you did have moments. We all do. We're human. When we fall, when we feel like we're going backwards, what kept you going? What do you think was your main... That's it, I'm getting back up. What got you up every time? Are you ready to lose inches, increase strength, and tone your body from head to toe? Are you ready for a total body, mind, and spirit transformation? I am excited to announce that I am launching my exclusive 8-week Pilates Return to Life training program. This will give you an opportunity to have a total body, mind, and spirit transformation of health and wellness to a new lifestyle. Imagine in 7 days you will feel a difference, in 14 days you will see a difference, and in 8 weeks you will have your new Pilates body. So what do you say? Want to join me on the mat? Head over to jenniferpilates.com today. Space is limited. Use a special promo code EW and the word special, EW special, to receive $200 off while space is available. Head on over to jenniferpilates.com and I'll see you on the mat.
I have to relate back to the worst times of my life. And I would relate back to the being locked up in a criminal correctional facility and being a private, the lowest form of existence, like a worm in soil. And so I could feel myself. I say, oh, I'm better. I could always say, but it can't be as bad as that because I'm better now. I've got 2 years of college. That's a lot better than having no years. Or I'm this rank. Now I'm much better than 17-year-old nothing and with nothing on my shirt, nothing, no little pieces of medals or anything. So I'm better. And it's like, I would say, so I think I would look back on the worst. And that's like, that's what propelled me to go up because there was always a worst time you could relate to in life. And so I would go and I would form like, it's not as bad as that. I said, yeah. So that's what propelled me. Yeah.
That's amazing. In your book, I love it because, as you say, there are a lot of sexy, naughty aspects, which is really turning the pages. But there's also, I feel like the second time through, I was like, what an incredible tribute to the relationship with your dad. Will you share your moments with your dad in the book with us? Because it was very special.
The book's called A Soldier Against All Odds. But what thing I had it for me was my father. I had a good raising from a good father, which I attribute to him a lot of my survival, a lot of my persistence. He was always somebody who rooted for the underdog. And so he always secretly, even though my mother like always beat my ass all the time, but my father was always secretly like, hey, you know, I believe in you, son. I believe what you, he would quietly say that not to upset my mother. So there was a yin and yang type of thing going on with mother and father about me and my issues and things. But I attribute it to him because he secretly believed in me. And he came from a very white trash, poor environment. In the South, there everybody was type of a poor, but he was a poverty, like an orphan type of a just moved around from a place to find food. And he didn't really have a family and he grew up with worms and just like dirt type of poverty. And he became successful in life, but he always said, you know, and son, you know, you always got to, he was just a good father figure. And he always believed, he was a positive character and he believed in me and a lot of all of his children. And he just thought, you know what? And he always told stories about, I'm talking about a storyteller, he told stories about his life, and I always wanted him to have a book, but he didn't want to do it. But I said, I'll tell a story for him. And my mind always goes to him in many ways. So one thing I had in favor was a good father. Most of the things were against the odds and defying the odds, but that's who I attribute to him. And he was a character of his own right, and he deserves his own books, but he's passed away now. Yeah.
Yeah. And he too was in the military.
So he was in the military. Yeah. He was in the Navy. He served 4 years and he looked at the military as just a way out of poverty for the most part. He didn't look at it as a career. He did 4 years, but he did attain a very high medal, the highest peacetime medal in the Navy Marine Corps. It's called the Navy Marine Corps Medal. And he attempted, and even his attempt to save someone's life jumping into the ocean gave him a very high level of an award of bravery, an act of bravery at sea. And so I did 31 years and he did 4 years and I've only got one medal of those 31 years that is above him. his act of bravery was just a very wicked event. Now, he never talked about it. He didn't even like the military. To him, the military was just a way out of poverty. And when I joined the military, it was, okay, I'm okay with that because you can't get into damn college for some reason. So he was, yeah, if you can't join the military, if you can't get into college, join the military. And that was his attitude. But if he felt, or if anybody felt that I could join the college, then I would join the college. But I did both. So I surprised a lot of people. I did all kinds of things that surprised him. And he says one of his greatest sayings and throughout the book is, son, and you surprised the hell out of me. And that was my own father that knew me the most. And I was just defying the odds against everybody and even himself, which he was he couldn't understand how I was doing everything I did.
I know. It was such a beautiful relationship, and the correlation, how you weaved in and out both your lives throughout the book was so well written. For someone like yourself out there who says, wow, I feel like I have a story that should be shared, similar to your similar experience within the military and the experiences, what advice would you give to that person?
I feel that you're going to have to get somebody who's a ghostwriter to help you out, because your life is probably very emotional, like mine, like any life that has a lot of ups and downs. And if you want to get to the heart of the life, you've got to give it all. You got to be vulnerable. And to be vulnerable, it might be difficult. And to have somebody who's on the outside looking in, being more objective and not, even if I really knew how to write, I need help because of the emotions of it. You have to flow it. You have to flow it a certain way. You got to have a storyteller to help you out. Yes, of course, it's going to be your writing and your style, but I would say to get somebody who's a trusted ghostwriter. And I had to figure out how to go. I don't know anything. I had to figure out how to get a ghostwriter, how to advertise and to bid out a project. And I would say to get help, definitely get help on your story, on your memoir, and to also be vulnerable, to give it out, because that's what people identify with failures and fiascos, which are in my book. And so that's what you want to do. Yeah.
I think that's beautiful. And that's also such a tribute when I think back on to the many stories, not even your stories, your journey throughout your book, is you're vulnerable. And you're never afraid to ask for help. And you're also never afraid to lend a hand to help someone else. And that brings me to, in your book, you talk about the 5 P's that you live by. Will you share those with us?
So one of the things I told you about was just my processing ability is slow. So I have to compensate in certain areas. 5 P's are prior planning prevents poor performance. Prior planning prevents poor performance, or PPP. So I would plan out. I would visualize in the future things, what I had to do a year out, 2 years out. And I was using this really as a compensation skill. This is a good life skill anyway, to visualize what you're going to do out and to compensate. If I was in a college semester, I would be thinking, what am I going to do next semester? What classes am I going to take? Who's the school teachers? Whatever it might be. And then I would even think 5 years out, what do I visualize myself being and doing at that time of that goal? And it was it came through compensation of my reaction to things quickly. I was really slow on that in many ways, unless I planned and trained for it. So I learned to train and train my mind and visualize out and plan for the future. It's just something that came with my training, and it also came with just a compensation skill. And I still do that. And I'll put things out on the calendar or things I might want to do. And you can always repeat and repeat, and maybe you can fail and just try it again. But those are the five. Prior planning prevents poor performance. So I would plan out or visualize out what I wanted to do down the road. Yeah.
I love the 5 P's. I think they're so great. And something that's easy that we can literally all employ every moment of every day to help us out. So when we think of a lieutenant colonel in the Army and a man who has traveled and shared lots of stories, good, not bad, but naughty, interesting, intriguing, there's got to be stress. There's definitely going to be trauma. There's going to be ups, downs, and all arounds. When you look back over your military career, What kept you going? How did you manage stressful times, the trauma times, versus the times that, you know, were good and jovial and you had a good time with your fellow soldiers?
Yes. When I got beaten down, and I had, even when I got the worst time in my entire career, when I was a lieutenant colonel, and I had been a senior person, very accomplished, and I was beaten down by my own establishment, my own army, my own organization, the leaders in there. I just had some conflicts in personality and territory disputes. And I went into a very deep time where I, 2007, 2008, 2009, I went into depression, I went into anxiety, and I had to get help. And I was on active duty. This was probably before the time of, you know, it was not a popular thing to do. I keep it secret, but I had to have help. Basically, I went into I don't know if you've been into a ghostlighting or a backstabbing event where there's territory and people and you have conflict in organizations. And I was a senior person. A lieutenant colonel would be a senior person in the military. And I just went into a situation where I didn't agree with a lot of things on the job. And I just went in. I got thrown under the bus. And I was accused of espionage against the U.S. government. I went through a federal investigation. I went through informal charges of pedophile, which was totally bullshit, but they tried to get me out. So when you're a senior in the military or the government, it's kind of hard to get you out. You have to have wicked type of charges, accusations to either transfer the trash, which they could, or to give you a bad evaluation, or to really get you, it's really difficult to get you out. But once you, there can be accusations about people and their lives, and they can go through hotlines and various things of that nature. And a lot of people asked me, and during that time when I was the worst time I've ever had in my life, I feel it was worse than any time. I was like, what did you do to piss off these people to do all this stuff to you? And I'm thinking, you know what? I just disagreed with a lot of things in my job and the things that I wanted to do in the part of the job that I was at. And I felt that I was, you know, and they didn't like it. And there's power plays, and there's also politics that are in the government and the military at senior levels as well. And they can also conflict with things, but they can't, they don't like beat you. They have different ways of screwing with you. And it could be just false allegations or throwing things through hotlines and using the establishment of what's supposed to be, it could be sexual deviancy, it could be criminal activity, it could be espionage. They can use all these little things and to screw with people. And there's games that can be played at a different level that I didn't know about. And that's what happened. And that took me down. It took me into depression and anxiety. And I had to go get professional help. And that was worse than any war. I would rather be shot at physically in war. I've been in Afghanistan. Matter of fact, my shirt here was my soldier in Afghanistan. But I would rather than to have false, wicked accusations be pumped against you. And it was basically as a territorial kind of conflict. And it wasn't even in a war. It was in South Korea. So I'd already been there three different times. But that was, and what I did was I went to a professional, then I held on to my family. Then I exercised like a crazy man. I went to exercise almost insanely and to process it out. And what I found by accident, that when I did motion and when I went through emotions on emotions, so if I was to cry or get mad while I was running or while I was doing the elliptical at the same time, if you can get those things to converge, I found that there was an emotional vomit that occurred. And I did this by accident. No professional told me about it. But if you were to run or walk or whatever you like to do physically, and then you were to emotionally vomit while you're doing it at the same time and don't stop it, That helped me out a lot. And that helped me. And I did that a lot.
That is incredible. What you're describing is a somatic release. It's allowing, right? So it's allowing the emotions at a cellular level that generally get trapped and then become trauma bonds and traumatic situations come out in our body. You actually, through intuitiveness, listening to your body, allowed the emotions to flow through and out so that trauma did not stay trapped in your body. And that is incredible. That takes people years to learn, lifetimes to learn. And here, I'm so proud of you that you intuitively went for it and allowed yourself to process the way that you were guided to. That's amazing.
It was like a vomiting. I was mm-hmm. like, and I, after I did it, I wanted to, I didn't even know what the hell I was doing. And I was like, I'll do it again next day, the next day. And then sometimes I would do it and I would be on the elliptical more than I normally would be. And there'd be water running off of it. I'd been crying. And then also, like, it's been an hour. I only wanted to be on here for 30 minutes, but it's been an hour. And it's almost as if my brain just like I lost track, which I don't normally lose track of time. But hey, exercising for an hour compared to 30 minutes is better. And I think, well, okay. But I did feel like a release, and I just lost track of time on the machines.
That's amazing. Is that something that you still do now? What are your top go-tos?
A little bit, not as much, because I was nowhere near as much trauma. But if I am in an anxiety situation, I will go and definitely exercise. Exercise is a part of my life, but I have not been in that type of detailed trauma since then. But I will go and do it at a very minimum. If I, like, for example, if I'm thinking about something, I will go and I'll laugh on the machine, or I'll just allow them. So when I'm on a machine or I'm running, I'll definitely allow my emotions to come through in the gym or everywhere. It doesn't. So that does help me out. It helps me to think, process things. But when I was in that trauma, that big trauma, which really caused that was a diagnosable, that was a different story. That was when I was like in hell. That I was like, I had to do it. Now I do it just to do it, to just modify things. Yeah.
To stay healthy. We've gone through an incredibly traumatic experience with you, and I thank you for feeling so safe and vulnerable with us today. How about we switch the energy a little bit and tell me about, if I said, what is one time that you're like, oh my gosh, that was so wild, out of the years that you were in the military? What's that moment like?
I got a badge called the Expert Field Medical Badge. It's a medical badge for stabilization of patients and getting them off the battlefield, saving people's lives. I didn't save anybody's life, but I got this very important badge that's worn at the top of my uniform. And it took me 3 times to do it. And I wanted it so bad because it's the excellency of taking care of soldiers and saving their lives. It's just, it's a competency skill. And it took me 3 times to do it. And I went through so much to get that badge. And it's supposed to be, it's expert badge, medical badge. I got it on the third try, but I had fell into a cesspool on the first try. I have been neck deep in shit on this, but trying to get this badge, I had been through so much stuff to get it. And to finally get it was very, very happy. That was one thing. The second thing would be just graduating from college. Graduating from college defied, I had a book at that time, but I didn't write about it. I was in my 20s, but just getting my college degree, and I know most of your listeners out there make better than me on the college entrance scores, just trust me on that one, than I did. And so getting my college degree was like a big deal. So those were two big things, just achievements of life, of just defying odds and just working at it and getting it. And yeah, those would be very two happy experiences for me.
Those are really great happy experiences, definitely. Let's talk about now transitioning. So transitioning from military soldier life to being a civilian, it's not easy. I can also testify being even the family member of a military person transitioning. It's not easy for the family. It's not easy for the person. There's definitely an identity crisis that goes on. Tell me about your transition, because you are doing so many incredible, amazing things to help others through it, through your life lessons.
Yeah, I've got that one book, A Soldier Against All Odds, that I'll show right here. It's the blue book on Amazon. But then I have another book, which is Out of the Uniform, Back into Civilian Life. This is more of a veteran self-help book, and I have a lot of links. It's a shorter book, but it's about how to get, once you get out of the military and you go into civilian life, a lot of people just, they're just ready to get out. They're just done. And once they get out, they have problems transitioning. They may need their veterans benefits. And this is, the second book is more of a veteran self-help guide on how to get your benefit. A lot of people just want to get out. I'm done. But they don't understand the Veterans Administration. And it's not just health care, but it's money every month. It is various medicines. It's various procedures that you could have done on you. A lot of people don't have medical care. And I'm not going to say the Veterans Administration is the best healthcare in the world, because it's not. But I do say that their money is green and they have a lot of benefits. And I would say that you'd be fooling yourself not to apply for the Veterans Administration's healthcare benefits. And it's not necessarily because, let's just say that you never went to war. Let's say that you never fired in combat. But you know what? It's not. It's more. You served it. You deserve it. Go and apply for it, because there are second and third order things that you probably don't understand or know about what's going to happen in your future life that will affect you or your family. So I say, even if you say, let's assume you think nothing ever happened to me, I'm not hurt, that's fine. Still apply. Go ahead and apply. Get into the system, because we don't know what's going to be second and third order situations that occur later on in your life. It's like investing in the future. You put money into an investment or a mutual fund, but you don't really know, is nothing going to happen maybe, but maybe later on this thing compounds, and that's the way your life, the way your life is and the way the benefits are. So I'm saying that go ahead and apply regardless of your, whatever you might think. And because there's not just healthcare, but there could be clothing allowances to you. There could be mileage to go to the appointments. There could be free medicines. There could be free trips. Veterans trips, they give you trips to go on vacation and things of that nature, because of you, maybe you have post-traumatic stress, or maybe they just feel that you need to get away. I'm just saying there's so many things that I found out in here that are just more than just the money every month. And it's more than just the medicine, and it's more than just the healthcare. There are things that could live on past that, and other things, veterans home loans, veterans, it goes on and on. It's almost really, it's truly mind boggling in a way. That's why I had to put it in a book with many links to various things. It's more like to open up your mind to it, and that your veterans benefits could live on past your death in many ways. That's just something to think about. And it's something that I know these veterans out there, I don't deserve this. I don't deserve that. I didn't do anything. It's like, if you served and you deserve it. And so I think they're fooling themselves to think that they should not apply. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And I've even seen it into car insurance, home insurance, and it was later in life. My grandfather really didn't take advantage of his VA benefits until he was in his late 80s, early 90s. So yes, there's no time frame on thinking like, oh, it's been too many years. There's no. And there are, like you said, there are so many benefits that no one tells you about. And it's mm-hmm. It's definitely not easy, right? Like, you do have to jump through your hoops. But if you take the 5 P's and you can employ them, mm-hmm. and they can get your book to help guide them through it, it definitely, mm-hmm. especially with where we are in the world today, geez, Louise, if we can save you $5, $10, anything at this point, how is that not worth it?
Yeah, just a veterans. If you got a veteran's identification card by applying, that's going to give you, 10, 20% off at various places. That's mm-hmm. just list one small benefit. But again, there could be second and third order benefits that you just don't really. It's the largest healthcare organization in the world. I'm going skiing next month in Aspen, Colorado, funded by the Veterans Administration. I do it every year. I've always done it every year. They're doing this because they want people to get out and ski on the slopes. But it's not just skiing. That's called the Veterans Winter Sports Clinic. But it could be the Veterans Winter. It could be the Summer Sports Clinic. If you like golfing, they'll send you to golfing. If you like creative arts, you like to do artistic stuff, they've got a. So what I'm saying is, like, there's just so many things that just, if you can't drive a car and you get adapt, maybe I'm 90 years, I'm only 58, but let's just say I'm 90 and I can't drive a car and I need help. They have adaptive car things. They've got adaptive, I get wheelchairs, adaptive housing things, and they've got adaptive. So there's various things that you just alluded to that I don't even know. I hope I can still drive a car when I'm 90, but I don't, maybe there'll be something in the future that they'll have. But sometimes I sit around and I wonder if I know it all, and I don't think I do. And I don't think any other veteran service officer, because it's such a large thing. And if you can just get represented by a veteran service officer, get my book, check that out, give you a good introduction. in a very plain language, a very easy language to understand, which I like to write to the lowest level because I feel like sometimes I'm at the lowest level. And so to get that communication out there and to give the information to you.
Absolutely. I think that's wonderful. And I want to touch on, so since you have been transitioning, you spent some time at the southern border. And it would be remiss of me not to talk about this subject based on where we are right now in time and space and what's going on. And it even, I get teary now, even thinking about some of the stories that you shared about being there. And I would love for you, if you're comfortable enough, to share some of it, because what it did for me, we oftentimes only see one side, maybe two sides to the story. And nowadays in our world, I swear there's 10 sides to every story. And your experience shared a whole different perspective for me. And I would love for you to share that so that we can help educate people around the world as to what transpires at our southern border.
Yeah, I was working, when I retired, I went to work for the Centers for Disease Control. And I was helping to process people coming out of the southern border, out of El Paso. I was specifically located at Fort Bliss, Texas, and that's near where the border's at. And so they would come across the border. But by the time they got to us, my job was to do medical processing. In other words, make sure their vaccinations were up to date, lice, problems with medical, their medical care. And they had a lot of problems medically by the time they hit the border. And it's not just vaccinations. It could be lice or bugs or what have you. And these were children. They were only children that were between the, probably between the ages of 10 and 17, 18. But by the time they got to us, they had been through so much hell. Most of them are not Mexicans. They're either Nicaraguans, Hondurans, or from Colombia or other places. They're not from, actually, most of them are not from Mexico. They're from other places in Central America. And then by the time they got to us, a lot of the kids, they were really filthy. They had lice. They had parasites in them. They had been either raped or abused along the way multiple times just to get to the border. They knew they had to send their children, and they would pay, for the parents would pay, or they have people to pay for them to get there. Once they got there, I was working at the intake center. And so we would intake the, and it was an entire, like a military, it's kind of like a military base within a military base where you had, I was only with medical, but they had folks with physical problems they might have or ailments. I was more with the vaccinations and the public health. And then they had psychological. That was a huge organization. And then they had the caseworker associates. They would farm them once they got through. The process was to get them, try to get them a little bit healthy, get their vaccinations, and then find them a friend or a family member to send them off to. And they would be coming in through by the busloads. And so we had a dormitory with the girls and the boys, and they had the food, but they were watched all the time to make sure they're safe. And this was, I don't know if it's still, it's probably still occurring, but it had been going on for years, and it went on for years. And I was only there for about 1 month, but I got to see a lot of sad cases come through. You could see they've been abused and neglected and things along the way just to get to where they're at. Barefoot and abused. And then we give them clothing. We give them the clothing and the medical care so they would get straightened on out. And they were hungry. They were hungry kids, and they thought food, like a piece of fruit, was like something to steal. And we had fruit everywhere. We had food everywhere. We said, you don't need to steal this food when you see it. This is for you, but you don't need to steal it because you're going to, while you're here, you're going to be taken care of. But that's what they're used to doing. If they see something, they're going to take it because they think they might not have it again. But I feel that when I was looking at them like an alien creature coming in, and they were probably looking at me like I was some sort of an alien creature they'd never seen before. But that was an enlightenment time that the folks were just trying to get to the United States for whatever reasons they need to get there.
Yeah, it's just so powerful. What is your thoughts on what you saw versus what you hear about what's going on now? Because I appreciated your story because we haven't heard anything about children. Now we're seeing everything but children and women. And so what's your perspective on where we're at now?
I think the border is, I'm in Texas right now. I've been in Texas for about 9 years since, but I think it's really out of control personally. I think it's just being the floodgates have been coming through big time. I think it's just a lot of people coming through. I hear reports now from people coming out of China and various other countries outside of Espanol or the Spanish language. And I think something's going on. It appears that it's just too much. We've always had migrants coming through. That's been illegal, whatever. They've always been coming through. But I think they're coming through at such a level that we just can't handle them. And I know in the state of Texas, we're shipping them off either by airplane or by bus because it's just too much to handle. I think most of them really, from what I saw, most of them want to work. Even if they're 14 years old, they want to work. All they want to do is work and send money back to their families for the most part. And they will sleep in a trailer with 10, 20 people. They don't care as long as they can work. That's the big thing. So they do want to work. So I do think there's a need for them because a lot of folks in America don't want to work. So on one hand, we got to have people to do the menial labor and all the things that we don't want to do. But then again, there has to be a balance, too. I think right now they're just coming at too much speed. It's too much. And they probably need to maybe somehow filter it out. But that's what I saw. I saw their desire to, on the positive side, man, all they want to do is work and take care of their family back home, even their mother and father, whatever they have. But on the other hand, it's just too much that's coming through.
What do we do? Is there a happy medium, do you think? Because while we get it, right, we don't want to see anyone suffering anywhere around the world. But at the same time, there's definitely been this like topsy-turvy moment that's happening here in America where we look around and now maybe there's a lot of people who aren't so friendly, who are looking more, I just want to take care of my family. How do I take care of you? Or go back to even the basic comment of, we have so many homeless veterans here. We have so many veterans that need to be taken care of, and we're not taking care of our own. Where do we find a happy medium? What do we do with this?
I think I would somehow go back to some sort of in the past of how we filtered them out in the past and whatever techniques the border has and the immigration has to filter them out at a higher level of standard than what we're doing now, then it seems to be they're just coming through very more easier. I'm not an expert on the border control and the immigration, but somehow we need to probably reduce that a bit. But it seems like everybody that's lame, lazy, or crazy is just coming through just easy. It seems like that's been in the past. So I think just get some more control on it. And it's still going to happen. I think they're still going to have some folks coming through. They've always done that. But I think at this level, it's too high. And to put some more, maybe, I don't know what type of resources they've had in the past to put just to filter them out a bit more than they're doing now.
Yeah, I agree. Hopefully sooner than later, we can just lift in. Is it too much to ask for a wonderful, happy world where everyone has a glass of water and a meal to eat? I personally don't think that's too much to ask for.
I mean, yeah, if their friends go through, they're going to talk and they're going to say they went through here and went through there. Maybe I only have to be raped or robbed a few times to get there. But if I get there and they're letting me through, they're living over here making whatever, $10 an hour, sending money back, which is a lot of money. The word spreads, and there are no dummies down in Colombia or wherever, mm-hmm. they're Venezuela. The word spreads. Can you get through that border? Can you get through it? Yeah, you can. You have to go through here, get pay this, pay that. But if they can't, if they feel that they can't, if they can't get through that border, the word's going to spread somehow. And I think it's just filtering them out. And those folks on the street, they talk to each other really, really rapidly. They've got cell phones, they got texts and things. It's a tough deal. It's tough.
It definitely is. It definitely is. Bringing it back to your book, A Soldier Against Odds, you have a lot of wonderful organizations that you are supporting through your book. And I would love for you to share that and where all the proceeds from your book are going.
Yeah, the proceeds, I've been donating for years all the proceeds go to nonprofits, veterans nonprofits, such as the Disabled American Veterans. It's a national organization. And in South Carolina, I have the Upstate Warrior Solution. South Carolina is for Upstate Warrior Solutions. So those are the two main ones. There's a little bit of other nonprofits that I give to that are veterans, but those are the two main ones. And I've been doing that for years, and I participate in a lot of their activities. So in my book, which is going about to the out of the uniform back into civilian life, one of the things a veteran has to really needs to do is get with a nonprofit, a service organization, to get their stuff in. The veteran service officer will help you. It's like your tax man. You give your tax woman, your tax man, the tax documents, and they're the experts to get you the best tax advantage of your whatever. So when you go to the veterans, when you're transitioning out, you go to a veteran service organization and you give them your documents. And the veteran service a man or woman, they will help you get the best rating that you're possibly given. They'll also show you all the benefits of the organizations or the VA as well. So that's where I give my money back to, is to the VA and to other nonprofit veterans, nonprofits activities. I've been doing that for years, and I'm a big supporter of them, and I've used their system as well.
Yeah. I think that's wonderful. And on behalf of every military person in my family, I say thank you, because it's definitely much needed. I hope that our world can come to a place where we do take better care of our veterans, and that we no longer see veterans on the streets, and that we have a place for every person who has stood up to fight for our rights of freedom.
Yes. And the veterans on the streets, the homeless veterans, that's a tough one. It's a tough one. A lot of them are with PTSD, or they may be with drugs and alcohol, and they're just surviving on a day-to-day basis. And we've got veterans support activities that go out to them. I know here in San Antonio, they do. The thing is, you've got to say, I need help, and you got to ask for help, and you got to want to have the help. But if you don't, if you want to stay on the street, that's going to be up to you. We can't force you to go and to get help. But yeah, that's a lot of these organizations will go out there and look around and talk to them and see if they are veterans that need they need service for the homeless. You need three hots and a cot.
Exactly. Yeah. Being in Phoenix, that's something that's been near and dear to my heart, which is helping the homeless that are veterans out there and helping them to find a way and making sure that they have the three meals or the cot if they would like that. And sometimes it's just the conversation, just wanting to be treated like a person. And that in and of itself really helps to give them that moment of clarity, of maybe that they can feel that they can ask for the help that they truly deserve.
Just feeling like you're a person. They used to be a real person in the military, and now they're on the streets and they don't feel real. And that conversation will help them out. It might connect them to actually get some help. Yeah,
absolutely. We are about to close out the show. This has been so amazing. Jason, will you share one piece of inspiration to take us on our journey today?
Yeah, I think for the most part, young people or even older people, if you just show up, you may not know anything, just show up, right place, right time, and the right attitude, you'll be doing better than 50%. And when you're doing better than half of the people by just doing some really basic things, showing up right place, right time, uniform, or right attitude, you'll be doing better than most. So that's my threes. Yeah.
I love that. And please, will you share with us, Jason, where can people best connect with you and to find your book?
You'll see all my social media handles at my jasonpike.org, jasonpike.org. You'll see all the social media handles there. I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and things of that nature. And my books will be linked into jasonpike.org, and they're both on Amazon.
That's it. Thank you for that. And as always, all of Jason's information and links will be over on the website in the show notes at jenniferpilates.com. Jason, thank you so much for sharing your book, your journey. You're such an inspiration to all of us to keep going and to live by the five P's. Thank you so much for being here today. And as we say, until next time, may you live an empowered life from within. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to Empowered Within with Jennifer Pilates. Your feedback is important. It helps me to connect with you and gives me insight into who you are and what you're enjoying about the show. For today's show notes and discount codes from today's sponsors, head over to jenniferpilates.com. Until next time, may you live an empowered life from within.